Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players podcast. This is our show for, you think I remember what day it is? I've got to look it up. It is Tuesday, May 19th, 2020. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again. The newly, I'm tempted to say renovated, but the truth is excavated Brooklyn Bunker. I did cleaning that's probably been about a year overdue recently, and man, it looks good in here. It just makes it that much nicer of a place to work. The ninth wonder of the world, according to Spencer Lugenbuehl, has gotten even a little bit nicer here today. Very excited to answer some of your questions. Going to talk about some stuff going on in the world of horse racing, and to do it with me, with you, with all of us, is a man coming in from the planet Texas. He is the people's champion, Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, my man?
What's up, PTF? Yeah, I'm up in here. I left my door open. This is my new thing. I usually don't do that in Texas, or maybe I'm just not home enough to like do it. But I've just been like leaving the door open because the weather's been so nice. And since I'm stuck inside, I'm trying to like, you know, feel like I'm not stuck inside. So I decided not to close my door for the show. So if you hear like a bird chirping or whatever, you have to just deal with it and pretend you're sitting outside too.
Nick Faldo approaching 18, looking for birdie on this hole. It's sort of like a Masters thing we've got going on. Hey, we're going to do a production meeting in the middle of the show right here because you are more well-versed than I am in this new technology we are using to record the shows. So my waveform is looking dainty and perfect. Yours is looking a little stretchy and coming in a little hot. Will the machine, I can't figure out how to fix it in real time. Will the machine just fix it though when it mixes it at the end? Or do I need to do something?
No, I think it looks, it looks okay to me. I mean, I'm a little bit stronger than you, but that's to be expected. I think that what we'll do, I think there's an option when you do like, you know, when you do the post-production, I think it cleans it up and matches us up.
If JK is a lot louder than me, let me know. I will actually watch a YouTube video and learn how to fix this,
folks. Yeah, I was a little too hot on the show I did with Marshall, but that's because I realize I don't have to put the mic so close. So I backed it up a little bit and so I did some test runs before this. I think it's better a little further away.
I just can't figure out. I mean, there should be a way that I can like correct this in real time, but I don't, I don't want to mess with it. If it's folks, seriously, let us know. If it sounds weird, we'll get it fixed for the next show. I think we can fix it in post and it won't be any kind of problem though. I hope. Fingers crossed. Anyway, big news today, JK, we got a New York Racing Association stakes schedule. It's been a little controversial. To me, my overwhelming reaction is how fantastic it's going to be to have top class racing back in New York starting on June 4th. I like the spreading out of some of these grade one races. I like the idea that each weekend's going to have feature races. I was sort of more apt to come on here and complain and quibble a little bit about the one thing in the schedule I'm not crazy about. But then I saw all this stuff on Twitter of people like saying that, to my mind, just maybe taking it a little bit too far and acting like, the 9-furlong Belmont Stakes is ruining their childhood. That whole routine, which for me takes it too far. Listen, I've said from the beginning, my heart this whole time said, I want to see a 12-furlong Belmont Stakes. In my heart, my head always understood it should be cut back. I had sort of concocted a castles in the air plan in my head where it would be run at 10 furlongs, which to me would feel more like a classic than a 9-furlong race, which I get it feels like appeasing a certain hero of yours and or turning a classic in its own right into a classic plus a prep for another classic, which I just don't love. But again, my overwhelming reaction is one of positivity. I'm just glad we've gotten to this point in the city where we're ready to have racing come back in New York. I'm going to be betting the race regardless. Your thoughts on the Belmont stakes schedule that came out today?
Well, I mean, I'll give my Twitter response first, and then I'll give the real conversation that we should be having anyways. Man, I don't give a damn. Like, who cares? This is, the world is not normal. And it's not like they're changing it forever. It's just for this year. And this year is obviously a very different year. And if you aren't aware of that, I don't know where you've been. Like for me, dude, I was thinking about this because I knew we were going to talk about this, talking about how different this year is. I literally, at this point last year, I had been to the Derby. I had been to Keeneland. I had been to Santa Anita 5 times. I had been to Belmont. I had been to Vegas twice. I had been to California over and over again. I'd been to Lexington 16 times. And literally, I've barely gone to the check my mail. you know what I mean? Now, so it's different. So just deal with it. It makes no sense to me to run a 1.5-mile race in the spring that's not connected and ending the Triple Crown. It doesn't make any sense. No one would show up for the race at 1.5 miles when they have the Haskell and the Travers and all of these things around the corner. It doesn't make sense for American racing. Our horses are not built to do that. And it's why it's so special when it happens at the end of the Triple Crown, because it's a test of a champion. It's not the test of a champion in the middle of June when we're, you know, in a pandemic when the Derby hasn't been run yet. So calm down. You know, they'll run the race in 1.8 miles.
And, do you take my point? I mean, everything you said there is very hard to disagree with, but do you take my point that the 1.25 miles feels more like the 1.8 miles feels a little bit more like a prep?
Sure. 1.25 miles. Sure. Yes. I wouldn't have been upset with 1.25 miles if they did it. I understand why they did 1.8 miles. I don't think it makes any sense to do 1.5 miles. The other thing that's exciting, I mean, look, you got to think about this, man, more than any other racetrack in any other jurisdiction in the country. I don't know, Santa Anita might disagree a little bit, but New York has been the most affected by this, right? They've lost the most racing days. Santa Anita at least raced for a little bit at the beginning. They lost the most racing days. They've had the most issues with COVID-19 on the backside and infecting workers and people on the backside. They're in the city in which the pandemic is probably the most intense in the world. And so it's just been harder for them to overcome so many things. Who gives a damn if they're doing the race at 1.8 miles? I get it. You're at home and you're bored and your keyboard fingers are feeling muscular, but I just don't understand some of the things people choose to complain about. And this is one of them to me. Even if you don't like it, like, so what?
I don't have any problem with somebody expressing some displeasure or putting it as a talking point. They've ruined my childhood type responses that.
I mean, talk about it. If you're frustrated that, you know, I'm sure that in a certain group text, there's going to be a text about this being the Baffert Stakes and we'll have to deal with that. And that's fine.
It isn't a great look. It isn't a great look that he says the exact thing. And then
but I don't think, I think he said, but here's the problem, right? And this is the same argument I'll give about the Arkansas Derby. When you have the two, if you have the two undefeated horses that are high on the list of everyone's list, and you say, look, I'm just being honest. I'm not coming there for 1.5-mile race. If it was 1.8 miles, I'd probably show up. I bet you he'd have shown up if it was 1.25 miles. He was just being honest when they asked him the question. He answered it. You know, you can't expect him to answer questions because he knows the pull he has. So he has to then be dishonest so that he doesn't get accused of the pull making, you know, it's like, come on. He just answered the question like, yeah, I'd love to come to the Belmont, but I'm not running in it at 1.5 miles with my undefeated horses who I want to try to win the Derby with in September. It's like, he just said like, if it was 1.8 miles, yeah, sure. I'd consider it. I'd love to do that. And now he can spread out. He can run one of them at Santa Anita. I would imagine he'll run one of them there. One of them will face 'Tis the Law, and it'll be a great showdown at 1.8 miles. And then we can save the excitement.
He was talking about both of them coming in with it being a grade one classic run to suit him. I don't know why you wouldn't see both of them in this spot. You think he'll split them up?
Well, I mean, how much is the Santa Anita Derby? That's a $1 million race, isn't it?
Yeah, but the Santa Anita Derby, you could run in both? No.
The Santa Anita Derby is like June 6th, I think.
Oh, so you couldn't. You got to pick.
So I think that, you know, you'll run, you know, maybe take the less mature of, and from a racing form standpoint, you run Charlatan and Santa Anita in June 6th, then you let him train up to the Haskell July 11th. Is that when they're going to do the Haskell? Someone tweeted that or texted me. I don't know if that's true or not.
I'm hearing it. That's interesting. I mean, okay. It fits right in with the schedule. Let's just go over this. So the Belmont date was what? June 18th?
June 20th.
June 20, and then we know first Saturday, you know, early September, we've got Derby. So between those two dates, there is time, obviously, to get a would you think the Travers will now move up and also try to occupy that spot?
The Travers has to try to be 4 weeks from the Derby. Okay. They have to. I mean, if they have to try to be 4 weeks from the Derby, if they're three, they're putting a whole bunch of pressure on people. If they're four, then you can, then no one will have a problem running in both.
I feel like, you know, it almost makes sense. As much as we've talked about how different Monmouth's Haskell and Saratoga's Travers are, like, so horses aren't even going to try to run in both this year, and they can both be positioned between the Belmont and the Derby, and they'll split. And the horses who are more about speed will run in the Monmouth race, and the horses who are really, you know, more looking for the full mile and a quarter and stamina will go to the Travers. It makes sense.
I would prefer that whatever they do, and I understand that you know, the Derby obviously carried the big sword. They moved first. Then the Preakness went ahead and said, okay, we'll do this. And then the Belmont's going to react. And now I would imagine the Pennsylvania Derby, the poor Pennsylvania Derby, but especially dealing with what Pennsylvania is dealing with and racing in general. We talked about that with Marshall Graham on JK Plus One. But I would like for a horse to be able to run in the Belmont, the Haskell, the Travers, the Derby, and the Preakness. I'd like for it to, for them to do their best to make that a possibility.
I don't think that's possible.
Well, I worry about the Haskell and the Travers. I think those are going to be
close, and they're going to be two different tests to me. When you just look at the way the dates are falling, when I'm looking at the calendar.
But here's the thing, though. If you think about it, it's mile and an eighth, mile and an eighth, mile and a quarter, mile and a quarter, mile 3/16, and then, you know, if you've been able to navigate that, then you can talk about the classic. But for me, it could work out. If you think about it, June 20th, if they run in the Belmont on June 20th, okay, then you have 4 weeks from there would be the 11th, which would be the Haskell. And you go that 4 weeks.
JK tries math fails.
Why was it 21, 27, 2, 3? Oh, sorry. 11. Yeah, 3. So four. If you go to the 11th or the 18th, then that would leave 3 or 4 weeks to the to the Travers if they do it like the 8th.
You're going to have 3 weeks between those races as such different tests as there. I mean, heck, somebody could try it, but I'm really not sure. Anybody will try that with the jewel of American racing perceived by many, Kentucky Derby being the next race in line, squeezing two races in that time. I mean, we can do a little head to head on the number of horses that will compete in all of this. And I'd put it at about 1.5 and I'd take the under.
Well, let me see if Dwayne Lucas has got somebody, because he'll run in all four of them.
Good. Lucas is excluded from the head-to-head. Lucas train runners do not count.
That would be hilarious if you looked up on the board in Vegas.
They're out.
If you looked up on the board in Vegas, will any horse run in all four legs of the blah, 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 blah? And then it says, Dwayne Lucas train runners excluded.
And we're not knocking anybody. It's just, you know, certain people, they're old school. They have they don't mind running them all the time. It's a good thing in many ways, but it's out of... I don't mean this as a criticism, but it's out of step with what most do. They beat to their own drum, and that's fine. But that's why we're making the gag, not trying to bury anybody here.
Well, my hope is July 11th. That's what I'll for the Haskell, and August 8th for the Travers.
Travers. Don't forget that one.
Let me ask you a question, Pete, real quick. Sorry. Whitney is obviously is a race that is always centered around your birthday. It's always been, you know, it's a race that obviously you probably love for more reasons than not. Do you have a problem with them running the Whitney and the Travers on the same day if that were to happen? Would you be okay with that?
Yeah, I'd be fine with it. I mean, I think it would, in this weird year, it might make sense to do that. So I could see that happening. I like your sketched out schedule. Let's talk about this Triple Crown holistically. I've been asked this question several times on Sky already. Haven't hit you with it yet, but I'll start now. So with this revamped Triple Crown, what would it mean if a horse happens to win all three legs?
Yeah, I mean, he's a good horse, but he didn't win the Triple Crown.
Oh, really? You would say you wouldn't count it. You feel like the 5 weeks. I feel like you can almost, I don't know, part of me wants to make an argument that it's harder this year. Does that hold any weight to you, or do you not care that it's harder this year? It's just a different deal.
I mean, can we just call it the Corona Crown or something? I mean,
please not that. That's terrible, Brent. You're a good marketing guy. That's a terrible.
I'm just joking. No, I don't know. It just, it doesn't, like, you know, we had this conversation with Sean Borman that, you know, he felt like it, you know, his lean was that, you know, it's still the same. to a certain extent. Obviously, he understands the differences. He's not dumb, but he feels like the accomplishment is still the same. But for me, part of the accomplishment is the turnaround, the quick turnaround. How quickly it happens and the order in which it happens. You run in a 20-horse derby, you know, in your first time going a mile and a quarter early in your three-year-old year, the first half of your three-year-old year. And then you come back in 2 weeks and you run in the Preakness. And then you come back in 3 weeks and you run the mile and a half Belmont on three different racetracks in a five-week span. That, to me, that is the Triple Crown. That is what was so elusive for all of this time. I mean, I'll have another, obviously he had like a season ending situation, but think about all the horses that, you know, maybe they just were off a week. Maybe Big Brown would have been better if he would have had a little bit more time in between. Maybe California Chrome, it jumped on his back at some point. There's all these reasons of horses that didn't get it done. And you have to think that some of it had to do with the span in which it happened. Point Given, you know, obviously got those two done, Fleet Out. You know, it's like Point Given wins the Derby if it happens.
Gary tells you he wins the Derby if he moves at a different time. I mean,
right, exactly. So
I'm contrarian on this, and reasonable people can disagree, but I feel like there was a lot of circumstances that kept that long Triple Crown drought, and that there's a world in which it's an advantage because they get in such sharp form. And especially you think about some of these horses who are good horses, but nothing great that have been able to put together big runs in the Derby and the Preakness back to back and sort of like overwhelm those Preakness runners because they're so sharp and they're so in form and nobody has any chance to catch up. I feel like you easily could have had, just through almost randomness, 2 to 3 more Triple Crown winners in that span. Look, I'm glad it worked out the way it did. I feel like we waited and we got the worthy horse. I'm not saying this is what I wanted to happen, but I mean, just trying to look at it completely objectively, I feel like you can make the case that being that sharp for that short period of time can actually be an advantage. Now, granted, the Belmont being a mile and a half definitely was a game changer for a lot of those horses and found some of them out. But some of them were even just super unlucky in there. A lot of them ran potentially winning races and or had trip excuses. So I don't know. I'm just not sure that this is actually easier, as it were.
Well, it deserves an asterisk without a doubt.
It's a different deal, so I can't disagree.
I don't care, though.
I'd still consider them a horse that should be discussed. You know, it would be a weird Triple Crown winner, but if you go back and you look at the history of Triple Crown winners, they didn't all do the same thing, and nobody's
grabbing
for Barton because his Preakness was a mile and an eighth or whatever. I'm making that up. I'm not sure that's what it was, but whatever. You're picking up what I'm laying down, I'm sure.
How about this? I'm not saying that it's not a great accomplishment and that there can't be a great horse that does it that accomplishment couldn't rank higher than the Triple Crown. I'm just saying they didn't win the Triple Crown. It's not the same thing. And here's my example to kind of support what I'm trying to say here is that, in my opinion, the greatest three-year-old performance that I have seen in my time is what Arrogate did to finish his year. Right? That was, to me, that was the greatest three-year-old performance. It's better than American Pharoah did in winning the Triple Crown, and it's better than what Justified did in winning the Triple Crown. I think that by American Pharoah, Arrogate doing what he did in the Travers and then going on and beating California Chrome in the Classic, that was the greatest three-year-old accomplishment that I've seen in my lifetime.
You're talking males?
Yeah. I mean, you can't take away from Rachel and
First thing that came to my mind was Rachel.
But so for me, my point is that if someone were to go on to win all three of those legs, that's fine. I'm just not calling it a Triple Crown, and it still could be better than everything else that I've seen, but I'm just not calling it like that.
I can't go that far. I'm willing to give you the asterisk, but you win those three races. I've still in my heart, I've got to call it. I'm happy with your asterisk. I've got to call it a Triple Crown.
Don't call it that, but I'm not. It's
different. I'll give you that it's different. But when you say you can't call it a Triple Crown, it almost sounds like you're diminishing it. And I don't think that's what you're meaning to do. It's semantics.
No, it's different. Yes.
I will make another point just to piggyback on what you were saying about Arrogate. I fully agree with you. Re-Justify. I can't quite go there re the Pharoah just because the Pharoah went and ran off the screen in a great time figure in the Classic as well. So it's harder for me to, I'll meet you halfway on that one.
It's true. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but American Pharoah didn't beat a horse like California Chrome.
That's fair.
And this isn't fair, but this is why this game is so beautiful. It's not fair, but I am also considering what Arrogate went on to do. And I know that was four, but I cannot, that span of races when he ran the Traverse, the Classic, the Pegasus, and the Dubai World Cup, that probably was the sickest four race span that I've ever seen and that I might ever see.
No less a turf authority than our old colleague Mike Watchmaker was comparing him to Secretariat. I mean, he doesn't use that stuff lightly. So yeah, I mean, I agree. And it's funny because the way he fell off, it's hard to remember. There's two peaks of form that I remember having like all these all-time great thoughts that I feel like the wind just got taken out of through history. And one is the exact one you're talking about. At that point, you know, at the peak of his powers, during Arrogate's imperial period, if you will, I probably would have compared him to any immortal that I had seen. And then it's easy to forget when they fall off. And the other horse to me that's a little bit like that, and nobody talks about him anymore, but I feel like Shared Belief at his best, that day he walked California Chrome like he was glued to the eighth pole. I feel like Shared Belief at his best as a horse who was
he did. He did have some beautiful races. You know what's funny about that, Pete? This just made me think about it. When you talked about Arrogate, we were talking about Pharaoh. The two of the great, you know, we're arguing and we're not arguing. We're debating about, you know, whether it was Pharaoh's performance, the 3-year-old or Arrogate's. The funny part about it is that both of those horses I was alive to for five-figure scores and they got me beat. I mean, can you imagine?
That takes special talent. You can try hard.
I got Pharaoh and Arrogate beat. I made it rain in California like twice. Like, dude, it's unbelievable, man.
Yeah, there's still that chalk outline in the assuming the patio is still there at the Shake Shack. There's still a chalk outline of me. I got another question for you about the Belmont Stakes, though. 16 horses are able to compete. Will we have a full starting gate for this first? You can see my air quotes, classic of the 2020 season.
Yes.
I was thinking definitely, and then I was
16 enter. 16 enter. 16 enter. I'm not trying to be technical, but 16 will enter.
Yeah. Well, how many are going to run?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't want my guess to be wrong because a horse scratches the morning of. I'm saying 16 will end. They will draw 16.
I see. I was feeling great about it till I remembered your excellent point about the Santa Anita Derby potentially, siphoning off some runners. So we'll have to see.
I would think that Baffert will send two. You know, Authentic, I think, is supposed to run Santa Anita Derby, but you got to think his connections.
Sorry about this. This is my mom calling. We're not going to. I'm gonna have to send her away. There we go. We're just gonna leave.
It's fine.
I'm not editing.
Authentic is obviously supposed to run in one of them, but I would think that there's a possibility that Authentic could be redirected towards out to the East Coast. Nadal's a big horse, so you'd think big horse Belmont, that makes sense. Big sweeping turns, that's probably better for him than somebody else. So, you know, I would think that a couple of them go out there. It's still the Belmont. I don't think that in a book or in a page, on a stallion page, you're going to, you know, I think that people will probably forget when you say the horse won the grade one Belmont. They're not going to be like, oh, but it was at a mile.
Breeders might like it better. Yeah. I think they'll like it better. The mile and an eighth, you know, it's more speed. It's not, the Belmont is not a sexy stallion. As much as we love it as fans and we talked about its significance, it is not a stallion maker. So
You got Tis the Law, right? You've got all the horses that were running that'll be running at Churchill, the 3-year-olds at Churchill. You'll have all the Florida 3-year-olds. You'll have all the New York 3-year-olds. I think they'll have 16. I think they'll have 16. It feels like they will. I mean, think about how many horses ran the Arkansas Derby, right? I guess there was like 17 total?
How many were running not to make the race to split, though?
Well, I mean, the ones that weren't supposed to run, they scratched. Like Saratogian was never running. He scratched. Wrecking Crew there was like a technical issue, something with, I remember Peter, I saw some article about Peter Miller being upset about it. That's why he had to scratch. So I think that there's a, you know what I mean? I think they'll get eight. I think they'll get 16. I think Tis the Law is a great bet in that race.
Yeah, he's real good. I have the list here. Jay Privman, speaking of old, it's like old home week here on the In the Money Players podcast. All our old pals from DRF getting a call. Jay Privman sent a little list saying horses under consideration for the Belmont 4.5 weeks out. Nadal, Charlatan, Tis the Law, Sole Volante, Basin, Farmington Road, Gouverneur Morris. And that's, you know, obviously just for starters. It's shaping up to be interesting. And yeah, from a breeding point of view, we'll do a little bloodstock corner here, as we say. But from a breeding point of view, it feels like the Belmont coming as the first of the three and shortening up to the nine, more appealing. When I was saying before, oh, Belmont, not necessarily a stallion making race, I was talking about in its normal configuration at the 12 furlongs. But from a breeding point of view, the race could take on more interest. Not that that makes Belmont any more money, and not that that went into their decision making, but it's just an interesting little knock on effect here.
One turn triple crown race. That's kind of exciting, huh?
Now you're going to get them ruining their childhood again.
Look, it's just sad. It's just sad that this didn't happen a few years back. An exaggerator would have finally got the job done.
Rain, you would have galloped for sure. We like exaggerator. We made up with him.
Yeah, absolutely. We met. How do you feel? And I know that you're passionate about this one. That's what I'm excited to ask you. How do you feel about the Met Mile having its own day again?
I like it. I like the idea of just spreading out the wealth a little bit. I feel like I get the Belmont Stakes Festival. I mean, I get it. I just think it's overdone a little bit. I'd rather see it either be a proper, like, 4-day ask it, like, distribute the wealth a little more. But as I've discussed, like, it bothers me to have the Brooklyn be a walkout race on a Saturday. It's just pointless to me. Like, yeah. And whatever extra it handles than it would have handled on the Friday, it doesn't matter, because you got to look at what it would handle relative to the allowance rate, the New York bred, other than that they could put there. I like the idea. I just think that I think they've gone in the past couple of years. I feel like it's just, in my opinion, it's been a little too much of a good thing. And the Met Mile on Belmont Day has worked better than I gave it credit for. I get it. But for me, that is not something that will upset me in the least.
Yeah.
It used to be great. That used to be a go-to Memorial Day weekend plan. And, you know, I don't go, you know.
Now it's back on. It's on America. It's on another American day, America Day, on the 4th of July.
Yeah,
it's on a Saturday this year, by the way. So that's pretty cool too. I noticed when looking at that schedule, those 3-year-old turf races were missing. Obviously, those were a startup idea of the last couple of years. They carry pretty heavy purses, and I'm sure they'll probably still run them. But, you know, but I didn't see them, so maybe they won't.
No. I think there was a line in the release that they're under consideration, but I'm sure, look, the purses were too much for those races, for what we were getting out of them, especially the later races in the series. So that just needs to be reevaluated.
It's not that it was a bad idea. It's just, it's like one of those deals where it didn't have time to come into fruition. You know what I mean? They did it for a couple of years and then they got shut down. Like, actually the Triple Tierra and the Triple Trinity or whatever, that like literally only had 1 year to try to make it work. And now it's, you know, disrupted.
The money needed to be allocated differently. And the rest of the stakes schedule needed to be changed. And just the condition book in general. I mean, I'll never forget. You had all these 3-year-old races for 3-year-old turf fillies last year. And then you had an A other than that had two horses that would have fit in either of the stakes. Like, it needs to be. Look, I get it. Nobody's going to get everything perfect the first time. I'm not knocking anybody. But I think with time and some rejiggering of the schedule and the purses, that would make a lot more sense. You don't want to do that to have a 6-horse field and then a race for similar conditions that could have drawn the same horses within 2 weeks. There was a lot of that weirdness. And I think this year they're vowing, you know, obviously purses are at a premium now. Without that casino money, everything's going to have to be looked at, and the money's going to be put where it makes sense. And I'd like to see those races come back, but just in a way that makes more sense for the horsemen. I mean, some of that money should be allocated towards overnight stakes that the shrinking, ever shrinking middle class of horsemen actually have a chance to get a shot at. You know what I mean?
Oh no, for sure. I mean, they're going to have to rework that, and I'm fine with that. You know, I mean, they're going to do what's right and what's best. I'm just glad they're going to be racing again, man. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun, and Obviously, we'll get to cover quite a bit of that. I would imagine NBC will still have the Belmont. So we probably won't have
that. Part of the reason that day, we've talked to our friend Peter Rotondo about this and the all-important windows for broadcasting, that they had a window that day. That's one of the reasons why that happened.
And so I would imagine that MetMile Day will probably be ours. So that's, you know, I think. So that's exciting and fun. I don't know. It could be a when and you're in NBC thing again, too. So I don't really know. But either way, it's just I'm glad they're going to be racing back at Belmont. I know the horsemen there have been rearing to go. And so it's going to be fun, man. And look, it's good racing. Those are all great races. The Jiper, the Woody Stevens, the Acorn. I mean, the Acorn's going to be a hell of a race. You know, I'd imagine we'll see Swiss Skydiver, Venetian Harbor back in the mix. And then and probably that monster filly for Baffert Gamine. I mean, what kind of a race is that going to be, you know?
Could be fantastic. Did you hear the crazy McPeak quote about taking, God knows if it'll even be allowed, but about potentially taking Swiss Skydiver over to run in the Guineas?
Oh, I saw it. I accepted a Twitter wager for jelly beans. Where you remember when I said the other day she'll never win a grade one, so someone wanted to get down with that.
Yes,
so
yes.
The Ogden Phipps is another one that popped up. I'm obviously rooting for Midnight Bisou, Monomoy Girl, and Cece to show up because I would imagine that Serengeti Empress might be pointing to that. I don't know. She might run at home and run in the La Troye Inn here, Stephen Foster weekend. So we'll see.
It's going to be fun. We'll be covering it all for you on these airwaves, talking about all these races and all the news going on. But now, JK, we didn't even talk at all about last weekend. Let's quickly recap. I'm not sure that we have anything I don't think I have anything earth-shattering to say, but it sure was nice to have racing back in California.
Oh, yeah, man. It was awesome. I was happy for all of our friends out there. It was really cool to see Nate Newby is staying in a trailer out there through the weekends. I guess I'm assuming what they're doing is they're having the jockeys and a lot of personnel stay there for the weekend, and then they can go home. And then when they come back, they get tested when they come back to make sure that they're not coming to the track with anything. But all of the jockeys were staying there for the weekend. And in fact, one of our buddies texted me and said, "Is this real? Are they really making them stay there?" And so I texted Gary Stevens, who obviously would intimately have some insight for what's going on there. And he said, yes, they can go home after the races on Sunday. They've got all the food they want, poker tables. Mike Smith said they've never had it better.
That's so great.
I don't think those guys are too upset about staying there.
Not worried about it too much. Okay. I mean, honestly, other than it was great to have it back. I mean, looking through the specifics of the stake performances, you know, we didn't have many cracking the 90 by buyer speed figure mark. I'm not sure we need to recap too much unless you had something that blew you away or a horse you're looking to bet back. All I know is the sooner I forget about the events of Churchill, I think it was on Sunday when I managed to get a couple of 4-5 beat, the sooner the better. I can forget about that.
Yeah, we can talk a little Churchill. I mean, I think Bellafina won. Good for her. I needed her for my lungs last time she raced, so that seems par for the course.
I kind of forgot. We should talk about Monomoy Girl, shouldn't we?
We should. Yeah. I mean, look. Incredible. Kudos to them for bringing her back.
Reminds me of Lady Eli, you know, for a horse to come back from the brink and be competing, be on the path to come back and competing in the biggest stages. I mean, that's, if you don't like that, you know, you have no interest in the sport. Maybe you can still be a gambler, but you have no interest in the sport of horse racing. From the point of view of the sport of horse racing, that was nothing but fantastic to see.
Right. And then for me, it's like the reason, okay, there's a stake coming up this weekend that she could have run in. So the idea that they decided to run her in the allowance race is just more indication that like Brad Cox didn't have her fully ready to rock and roll.
Great point.
You don't take a horse who's won like 5 grade ones and, you know, 3-year-old of the year. You don't take a Breeders' Cup champion and you take him back and have him fully ready to rock, especially when they've overcome so many hurdles in the recovery. You don't want to like run, have them fully cranked for the allowance race, right? He wanted to run her in the allowance race so he had extra time between now and the La Troye Inn, and then now he knows that she's sturdy, she's all good, she's coming out of the race fine. Now he can kind of lean on her a little bit, and then I believe the next time she runs, we'll see the same Monomoy Girl. Now, is she going to be the one we saw as a 3-year-old? I don't know. Maybe not. but she ran well enough. She did what she needed to do. And on a sloppy racetrack and her first race in over a year, I thought she was impressive.
I'll tell you what, from the next race, from a fan point of view, I will be rooting for her. I do not imagine I will be wagering. I mean, I guess it all depends on the construction of the tickets, and I'm not going to cut off my nose to spite my face. I would assume there'll be a major opportunity to try to beat her just from a gambling point of view. It's such an unusual situation, and you've got one coming back and didn't. I mean, you make great points of why she didn't run the figures that she was running before, etc. From a gambling point of view, I think it is 100% the right move to be attempting to beat. And I'll tell you what, when she comes down the lane and beats me, I'll be cheering just as hard as if I had money on her.
Look, Midnight Bisou's training at Churchill. And if Midnight Bisou and her show up in the same race, Midnight Bisou's likely going to be favored.
No doubt. No doubt. I mean,
So if I can get Monoway Girl at 5-2, you know, well, there's and maybe even better. I don't know. I mean, if CC shows up and, you know, what's the filly's name? Serengeti Empress are in there. You know, she could be a nice.
Serengeti Empress's name. That's some sort of interesting fake yourself out double block. I don't know what that is, but it's
that's funny.
But yeah, we did need to talk about that. I'm sorry. I'm still a little, you know, I've got quarantine brain, people. Don't worry.
Yeah, what else? There's nothing else, I don't think. I mean, who else are we? There's going to be 2-year-olds this weekend. Starting on Thursday, there's going to be 2-year-olds at Churchill. I looked up an interesting stat, Pete, that you'll be interested in. And you can, you don't have to pay me a commission if you want to use it on your airwaves overseas.
Oh, yeah, I like to steal stuff from you whenever yeah,
possible. Of course. Wesley Ward is 1-7 this year in 2-year-old races.
I'm like six last of them, year, 3-2 and under.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, probably all of them, right? I mean, they're all shorties. Last year at this point, he was 16-31.
Oh my goodness!
At this, you know, by May 20th of last year, I think it was 16-31. That's a Stats Raceland stat right there that I pulled off of Stats Racelands, by the way. But yeah, isn't that crazy?
The Brits will love that. So 16-31 last year, and I'll look it up. So it's
1-7 this year, 16-31. That was all by May 21st last year and May 21st this year.
When we talked about it on the other show over, it was last Friday, I guess, you made some great points about why it could get a lot better from here for him, but we'll really know this weekend, right?
Well, yeah, the other thing is the answer could lie in why is he not, I mean, he's only run 7. So it's not like he's run 31 like he did last time and he's getting his doors blown off. To me, it feels like he's holding them. Like he's not putting like the freaky ones. He's not like running yet, where usually he's running the freaky ones to get him ready for Ascot.
Right.
But now
on Ascot this year.
What's the point of taking your horses to Ascot if the owners can't go?
Right. Yeah, it's an excellent point. I mean, it is part of the appeal. There's no doubt about it. So
the other thing, obviously, we have to talk about, and I don't know if you've ever heard of the Stallion. You probably haven't, but on Thursday, the first Run Happy is running. And Run Happy is a...
I think I remember. Didn't he was running the King's Bishop a few years ago?
He did. He did. He raced medication free.
Circled the field. There was some funny controversy about who the trainer was. But whatever happened to him?
He stands at Claiborne Farms, and they do the usual unusually well. Dude, it's so funny. Like because the commercials are on the show, they're in my ear. So the Star Guitar commercial I've heard over and over again, and all the Run Happy stuff. Yeah. No, but he's the first baby. Pretty Happy is going to be making her debut on Thursday. So in the first race at Churchill. So that'll be fun to see what happens. And then I don't know if you saw that Mac extended his Belmont bonus, or extended the Run Happy bonus to Belmont.
So the first owner of a Run Happy baby to win in New York.
If you win a maiden race, an open maiden race at Del Mar, Saratoga, or Belmont, Max writing you a check for 100.
It's amazing. I'll tell you who's going to be rooting for this Run Happy baby in the first race Thursday, JK.
Who's that?
Every single person in the horse racing industry.
Oh, yeah. 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 We, I mean, you know, Yeah, of course, man. You can. I mean, people will tease, right? Of course, people will tease. I get that.
But we just did.
Mac believes in this stallion, and he was a hell of a racehorse. There's no reason not to believe in him. And Mac's put so much money behind him. And if Mac's right, the horse is gonna. I mean, he's gonna get his return. That's one thing about Mac. Well, there are a couple of things about Mac that I've seen just in the time of being able to be around him. He's extremely giving. He supports things he cares about, you know, and if that's people in Texas, you know, horse racing, whatever it is. And so if this horse goes, he's going to be rewarded for that. And so hopefully, you know, hopefully they're good and hopefully they run well.
Absolutely. When it would be good to see him get rewarded for his investment in the game, and good to see that investment in the game continue. Maybe he wants to sponsor a podcast. Who knows? Let's get to some questions from the listeners. This one's actually a comment that I loved. Had a great chat the other day with Dallas Baker, an Aussie, as you can probably get from some of the parlance in this note. He thought it was really interesting, JK, when you were making the point about big horses. This was talking about Nadal and Slop, and you had theorized this on the show, just to remind people who didn't hear, that a big horse like Nadal wouldn't necessarily be suited by the conditions. Hi, Peter. How's it going, mate? Just wanted to share something about what I heard Jonathan say on Fox last weekend. In reference to Nadal, he mentioned he had a theory that bigger horses generally don't go as well in the wet. One of the main things I did when working at the track was watching the parade and the angles and edge you can get from that. That theory could well be one of the most golden ones to take from the yard from what I've seen. Naturally, this is all a bit subjective, but I ran numbers off a database, not huge data, but confident enough to think it was enough to provide a guide, and running through a database, it equated to close to a triple overlay that was factoring in smaller types being more advantaged on wet and bigger types not as suited. Naturally, there are exceptions to the rule, but generally very powerful. A couple of caveats. For my numbers, this was all on grass. A major factor in Australia, the market was factoring in wet track form. The most affected rating is heavy in Australia, and many times a runner might have, say, a one start, one win in the heavy, and hence assumed to handle. Many times that track rating can be totally wrong, or often is when it was a two-year-old. Hate talking about type without seeing horses in the flesh, but to me on TV, Nadal looks like a beast and the absolute prototype of not being suited in the wet. So, a little bit of expert advice there, JK, supporting your theory. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, obviously, I didn't come up with that my own. I got it from just other horsemen, but it makes sense to me, right? Like, big horse sinks into the mud, has to pull himself out. If you've ever walked in the mud before, there's that suction effect. And I would imagine that the deeper you go in, when you come out, the suction effect is magnified. So it makes total sense to me. I don't know anyone who's done this. I've always wanted to do it, but unfortunately, the information's not easily available. They only show it on the simulcast feed. But a lot of those racetracks that were doing weights, giving weights, if anyone has ever done anything to try to track those weights, to if you've recorded those weights at any point, because I don't think they're available in like the PPs. I don't even have them on Sandy's website. But if you have the weights, it'd be interesting to just kind of get an average weight for a horse and then try to like, you know, cross-reference those horses' performances on sloppy racetracks versus like the light one. I mean, I guess my basic idea would be to find the average weight of the horse, and then I would try to find the average weight of a horse, and the ones that are above the average weight that ran on a sloppy track, I would call them the heavy ones, and the ones that were below that average on the, you know, on the light side.
A certain percentage, you know, you take a center cut that you just say they're average and you don't worry about them. And then you say 10% over, 10% under, whatever it is. It's a very cool idea. That's the thing is, I love that they're taking the weights, but it's, I don't want to say useless. That's too mean. It's not super helpful unless it can be like viewed in some sort of spreadsheet database form that, as Dallas was indicating, clearly the company he was working for at the time or what I didn't get very clear on what his actual role was, but whatever he was doing, I'm sure the data he was giving was clearly incorporated into a database. If we can get this number in a form where we can incorporate it into a database, let John Camardo go nuts and you know, we can have your conclusions.
So yeah, I'd be interested to see it on turf too, right? I mean, just, you know, how you know, and even like not, you know, anything, any turf not listed as firm. Anyways, if you have that information for some weird reason and you have like the data and you'd be willing to share or partner up with John Camardo, who's our resident data guy, data nerd. He calls himself a data nerd, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's not
so you know, maybe we can try to figure something out and try to turn that into a cool little project.
I've had so much fun. I'm working on this piece for attheraces.com. We're going to be doing meet previews for all the races that all the racetracks that they cover. And for whatever reason, I started off with Golden Gate, and it's been really fun. Excuses to yap with Sean Borman's helping out with a piece. Matt Vagvolgi's helping out with a piece, and John Camardo has been probably the number one architect of it. That's going to be fun. Hopefully that'll be up on their website later this week and send it out. I
think I've come by up the way,
hit me.
I talked to Sean Borman last night. And I'm this is probably a little premature, but he's working on making Hong Kong PPs, and we're going to do a show on our network about the Hong Kong PPs. And then we're going to do some live streams and watching them. And then Sean's going to start selling his PPs, and they're going to be better than any other PPs you can get for Hong Kong. And so, yeah, anyways,
I love it.
Business meeting in the middle of the show.
Yeah, there you go. And we can, and while we're talking about people we associate with who are doing interesting commercial endeavors, how about this Benny South Street project, JK? I still haven't had a chance to really talk to him about it properly. I've had a lot of stuff going on, but it seems to be getting some good traction, a lot of interesting retweets and publicity on the Fox show and all this kind of stuff. Have you had a chance to look at what he's doing over there? And most importantly, is it legal, or am I going to have to bail him out of jail again at some point?
He's a tricky man. No, I think it looks cool, man. I've always thought that access to better trip notes is always something that's important. I think that Ryan, Benny, whoever is a really good race watcher. And so I think that the information that he's providing is really good. And a lot of times people don't have the time to dig deep and to watch replays on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and to take all those detailed notes. So the fact that Benny's going to do it and allow you to be involved, I think is really good. So, check him out. It's great. I think he's doing 30 days where you can just kind of see him. So sign up for that and he'll just shoot you. I mean, I signed up just to see how it worked. Shoot you an email every day, just has a trip note. So you can just, do what you do there and see if you like it. And then when it turns over to something that is, going to cost money, you can make a decision.
I do need to talk to him. I have some ideas about it and wouldn't mind helping. I'm going to just try to find I guess the best thing to do is just to go to @BSouthStreet on Twitter, and you'll be able to see everything he's got going on. I'm sure he puts in there wherever it is. I can't remember the URL of the actual site that you need to go to sign up for it. But if you go to his Twitter, you'll no doubt be able to find it. And he's also been posting some stuff free. And I think even if it goes commercial, he will continue to post some stuff, once a week or whatever for free on our site. So folks have an opportunity to check that out. And talking about the whole Ryan Flanders, Benny South Street thing, I've often said it's sort of a Don Novello, Father Guido Sarducci thing. It's not like a secret so much as a character that he plays. And then that also put me in the mind of wanting to make a Mean Streets reference, JK. Joey Scala, Joey Clams, same guy. Anyway, that's all we have to say about Benny. We've got another email here to read. You ready for this?
Let's do it.
I prepped you for this one, so hopefully you remember the race. Maybe you didn't even open the email, and then you'll just have to play it by ear /fake.
I never open your email, so.
You have me filtered, right, to spam, or you just don't get around to
it? Yeah, you go with my, you go to spam, right, with all the other stuff. I just unsubscribe, but I couldn't find an unsubscribe button when you email me. I'm just kidding. I did see it. I'm ready to rock.
Okay. Now I assume this is a typo because he addresses me as high PTK. This is Sean Myers. I assume he meant PTF. I'm a longtime racing fan and mostly a weekend warrior when it comes to handicapping. I enjoy the ITM podcast and JK's appearances on Fox Sports as well as your sets on BIC. Well, thank you, Sean. My question for JK: how did he select the 5 horse in the first leg of the Churchill Downs Pick 5 sequence? In my interpretation of the race, I couldn't get to that horse. I understand how JK had the 6 horse in the second leg, a cutback. But as for the 5 in the first leg, he mentioned that it had closed into a slow race at Oaklawn. Was there anything else he saw? The reason I ask is I'm always trying to learn and feel like with that race, I really blew the analysis. Due to certain work restrictions, I don't have a social media presence. So email is pretty much my only way to connect, or through YouTube comment sections or via these contact sections of websites. Hopefully we don't get you fired, Sean, for reading out your email on the air. Thanks for any added advice JK might be able to provide. You guys do a great job covering the greatest sport, Sean.
First of all, he should get one of those. He should get like a burner account, like Kevin Durant had, and like like a lot of these other idiots that I see on Twitter that are, you know, talking trash. They use it for bad. I'm sure he could use it for good. You know, yeah. Anyways, don't want to get him fired.
At positive burner, you know.
Yeah. But, you just call it at burner account. I'm sure that's probably already taken, but.
Guaranteed. Give us some more backstory here. So what was, is this price? Like he didn't exactly set, you know, channel your inner Spencer and set this up for us. What
horse? It was Gulfstream, not Oaklawn, by the way. I think he might've been a typo by him when he said that.
He called me PPK. So it's completely
right. I think the race started with two horses that were related to Chad Brown, right? One that Chad had, one that Chad used to have. Quiet Dignity, for Marty Schwartz, who, had made some nice runs at Saratoga, but just never really got there. It was always over bet, never really ran well. Was switching to Brad Cox's barn. And obviously Brad could have moved the horse up. Keyword could. I'm not sure how good he was anyways, but and Brad's one of the greatest trainers in the world, but you still don't love a off Chad Brown move on the turf. You just, I mean, you know, you figure Chad got out what he can get out of him. Then if you look at the other horse, Fierce Scarlet, that was another Chad Brown runner that hadn't won since the maiden race, wasn't really like, didn't have like crazy numbers, was okay, kind of takes herself out of the race and has to make one run, was off of a layoff since October. Obviously, those two horses can win, but there wasn't anything to just fall in love with. So then I just kind of kept looking around and I landed on the 4 and the 5, Devious Charm and Temple City Terror. The great news about it is they both had run in the same race. Well, Devious Charm was closer to a slow pace. So it was an automatic downgrade for me. So the four horses that I liked, 4, 5, 8, and 9, three of them I had negatives on. So then when I got to the 5, Temple City Terror, I had noticed that that horse came from way out of it in the race that Devious Charm ran so well in, running second that day. Temple City Terror came from way out of it in that spot. If you look back to Temple City Terror's maiden win, it happened to be at Churchill on this surface, on that grass. And then he had Joel Rosario, who in my opinion is one of the best closing turf riders that there is. And then Pete, we've talked about this on the show before, where I do those little numbers where I use the pace figures and I do some adding and subtracting between different calls to try to identify that number that I learned from Paul Matisse, that idea of a horse that can quicken. In Temple City Terror and Devious Charm had the highest quickens for me in the race. But after I already said, Devious Charm was closer. So my default was Temple City Terror. And that's how I landed on Temple City Terror.
It makes sense. Just to underline what you're saying a little bit, you're looking, let's say you were using the time form array. You'd be looking at the pace figure to the pace call. So in a route.
Yeah. If you're looking at time form US, we'll do a little quick tutorial. So pause it. If you want to pull up your time form US from Saturday, May 17th at Churchill. I'm sorry. Sunday, May 17th, Churchill race 7, the 5 horse Temple City Terror.
We'll wait for you to do that.
Yeah, we'll wait for you to pause it. Right here. Okay, in the second, two races back, right? Someone asked me about the last race. I don't know why the horse ran bad, but that was the same thing with the horse 4 Graces. I can dismiss a race. You don't know. They have tummy aches. They're in a bad mood. They stepped on a rock on the way over there. They didn't like their rider. The surface was weird. It was lightning all night, so they didn't sleep. There's a million things. I just draw a line through a performance that I don't understand, and I pretend it didn't exist, and then I try to look at the horse, the individual, that way. So Temple City Terror's last race, bad. I drew a line through it. March 28th. If you click on the running line, you know, 10th beaten 7, 10th beaten 7, 9 beaten 5th, I beat 5, 9th beaten 5. You can click right there and it'll be a preference thing. And here are my preferences just so we're on the same page. I have weight on, pace figures, this horse, adjusted times, accrued splits. Okay, weight on, pace figures, this horse, adjusted times, accrued splits. That's the way that I have it. So if you do that, essentially what you can do is you can see the differential in he's at the first call, he was an 85, then he went to an 82, then a 93, then a 96. Between the 85 to the 96 was like 11 points. I felt like that was better than a lot of the other horses in the race. And I just felt like he was going to come running late. I thought he was going to get some pace to close into. He kind of had that finishing kick that those numbers suggested. So that's kind of a way to do it. There's some other ways to do it, but that's how I would do it if I was using time form US.
What did this thing pay?
It was 7 to 1.
Okay.
770 to 1. So I guess close to 8 to 1.
Yeah, that's a nice pick, and that's a great question. We appreciate people writing into us who are looking to understand more about our methodology. And it's almost like DRF and Timeform US should pay us for doing this stuff, JK.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I'm going to call an audible. We were going to do some voicemails this show. I might have even teased that earlier. But what we're going to do is put out another call for voicemails. We've got a couple of great ones, and I apologize to the folks who've left them. You deserve to have them on before this. It's a crazy time. So I'm going to read this number. We're going to try to get a handful more voicemails, and we'll use them. I think we're going to do a late-week ITM show in addition to our Horse Players Happy Hour. Speaking of our Horse Players Happy Hour, a special edition this week. JK, tell folks what we got going on.
Oh, Pete always makes me want to. I don't know. It's $179. It's a real contest. So it's a real. You can win a Breeders' Cup betting. Yeah, it's not a feeder. It's a qualifier. There you go. You snuck up on me. Now here's what I will say. You can get on Horse Players Wednesday and Thursday, and probably an early bird on Friday. I don't know that for sure, but I would imagine so. Mm-hmm. And you can qualify into the 179. So the 179 for you is not going to work. I get that. Try to qualify into the 179. The other thing that you can do that most people don't think of is they think of going partners on the $10,000 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. You could also go partners on qualifying for it. You can tell your buddies, hey, let's take $1,800 and let's try to qualify. We'll get five of us. Oof, I should have picked easier numbers than that.
Say 600, make it easier.
There you go. You can get everybody. Now, though. You can get everybody to chip in. You guys can try to qualify together and do that. So anyways, you know, participate. If you can't, do either one of those, still join us, watch it with us, hang out with us, submit questions, tweet us funny things, make fun of us. If you can get a funny screenshot of me, like picking my nose, get it, send it to me.
The zombie screenshot. That was my favorite one. I mean, that was truly terrifying. We need to do something with that.
Yeah. And then
end up on a t-shirt.
Whew, boy, that was rough. But that'll be fun. That'll be fun on Friday. So make sure you hang out with us. Those have been really good, man. We've you guys would be shocked on the participation numbers that we've had there. And you know,
it makes us look good, and it makes it so much more fun when we have the interaction, and we've gotten out a bunch of winners. Now, how was it last week without me? Were you guys, was it a true Wally Pip situation? Were you guys just cruising the whole time?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we always say production meeting in the middle of the show. Look, Pete, we decided that, we're going to have to let you go.
That's a free gig.
No, I'm just kidding. So so that'll be fun. Look at qualifiers on Wednesday and Thursday to try to get in there. I think they're $20. I played in one yesterday actually at Will Rogers Downs to try to get in. I got snapped.
I'm very happy that meet's over, by the way. Oh my goodness. I've just
Which one?
Will Rogers Downs.
No, they're on the feed right now.
No, I know, but I think this is about it.
Oh, Quincy, me and Quincy Jones are playing some matchups today. Quincy Jones found some matchups. So we're playing some matchups today, and we're 1-2.
It's hard.
So we lost the first one, and then we hit the second one, and I texted, it's an easy game. And then we got crushed in the third one. So
not such an easy game.
We're still trying to come back. The other thing I'll say real quick, Pete, is, you know, to kind of lead as a final thought, even though before you asked me, is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, every race from Churchill Downs is on Fox Sports. Make sure you tune in and watch that. And I made a joke on the other show that even if you can't watch it, just like turn it on your TV and then like let your cats and dogs watch it and you go do whatever you're doing. Just leave it on.
Turn it on, leave it on. One other thing about the happy hour shows, whether it's because you just want to be generous or if we happen to give you something that you make some money on, you can just donate too, especially to our friends over at Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, trfinc.org/players. We would appreciate that very much. But yeah, come join us. We're having a great time with those shows. I'm excited to get back in the fold. I had to move heaven and earth to juggle my UK schedule, but I got it done because I really want to be on this show. I think it's going to be so exciting to have a major prizes, hopefully, $10,000 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seat. And it's just been an absolute blast doing all that.
One more thing, Pete. Look, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but I don't care. Like, I say things on this show that I can get away with because, you know, it's our little community. No one's telling me. It's being called a pilot, but I'm fairly certain it's going to air on Saturday. They're trying something new where we're going to do a 30-minute talking horses before the broadcast. And if it goes well, then obviously we're going to continue to do it. It's myself and Andy Serling, and I am ready to go to war with that man if he tries to yell at me. I'm going to be ready to go. So
I can't wait.
Your DVR. 30-minute show. Yeah, right before. And so I guess the show starts at 1 Eastern on Saturday. So from my understanding, we'll be on at 12:30 with our quick little talking horses thing. We'll go over the entire card at Churchill, focusing a little bit more in depth on four races. And then it will roll right in to the first race at Churchill where I think Lafitte will take – yeah, we'll throw it to Lafitte. Lafitte will take over. He'll do the show. And then Andy and I will come back later on the show for all the stakes on Saturday.
Dude, that is a lot of races to go over in a very short amount of time. Completely different than the typical Andy format. You guys are going to like rehearse her, or are you just going to try to hope?
No, we're going to blast through the races that we don't have particularly strong opinions about. You know, if we agree on a race, that's going to be one we just pop through real quick. Boom, 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 boom. And then we'll have the races where we kind of, you know, get into it a little bit. I got to duck and dive and counterpunch.
This is going to be must-see TV, folks. Set your DVR 12:30 on Saturday to check out JK. Is this your debut on Talking Horses?
I've been on Talking Horses before. You know, it's funny, but I've never been on. I don't think I've ever been on with Andy.
You've never been on with Andy. You've never been on. So
yeah, I mean, I did it with Anthony Stabile a couple times, and then
I shouldn't say that.
You know what? Maybe.
But you know,
yeah, maybe I don't think I've ever done Talking Horses with Andy. Yeah, no, dude, don't get me wrong. When those PPs come out tomorrow, your boy is going to be focused. You can ask me what so-and-so did 9 back, and I'll be able to tell you everything you want to know.
Didn't you see the trip 3 back, JK? I've never tried that on these.
I'm going to roll my eyes at him. Andy, you like this horse on the turf? Did you not see that the damn sister's brother's friend could not even stand up on the turf? Please, you know,
try to roll reversal and you just abused Andy the whole time. Really must see TV. He may strangle you, but it would be very, and you may not get to go back on air, but it would be very entertaining. That's going to be great. I'm excited for that. I'm excited for the Horse Players Happy Hour. Great stuff on the network. I have to put in a plug, JK. This interview you did with Marshall Graham, you're getting him. I mean, Marshall is always fantastic, but you're getting him to talk about stuff he has never talked about before. We've had a lot of questions over the years about computer betting and things like that. Marshall, renowned as an expert in the field, but he's never talked about it like this. So you're definitely going to want to check that out, as well as Matt just continues to pump out great content. So proud of Naomi and the great work she's doing, and so happy also that Spencer is back in action with Red Board Rewind. Folks should check all this stuff out on the In the Money Players podcast feed. The In the Money media feed actually is the one where you get everything. Please also give us 5-star reviews. Give us your feedback. Subscribe. This stuff helps us immeasurably.
I saw. I was going to tell you. I saw we have 2 1-star reviews. One of them stupid. The other one is this dude said, tired old act. One guy picks the favorite. The other one doesn't have time to handicap.
I think we resemble that remark. That's phenomenal. You have, if you can't laugh at yourself, who can you laugh at, folks? That's great. Did the other one have to do with it doesn't come in very well with the Wi-Fi in my mom's basement? Was it that type of thing? The other one?
Oh, no, I didn't. No, not like that at all. This is just some trolley guy. The rest of them were all really cool, though. Yeah, a lot of, I think like 4.5 stars out of 5. So,
let's get that number up there, folks. It would be good. It's, not only does it fill us with pride and make us reflecting the love of the community is something we're all about, but it helps people find the show. The better ratings you get on there, the more likely other people are going to be to see it and join our community. And that's how we can do this for free. You know, there's a lot of people out there. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm going to go ahead. You know, that guy made a funny joke, and there have been shows where we do resemble that remark, but most of the time we're giving you the good stuff here and stuff that I would put up against a lot of stuff people make you pay for. And we're giving it out for free.
They probably don't listen, but if they do, Hey, little fellow, whoever you are that said that, $1,000, you pick a day, we play a head to head and you won't beat me. How about that?
There is no chance you will be taken up on that offer. But if so, I would not mind getting a piece of your action on that. I did want to give out this voicemail because it would be fun to get. We got to get to these other voicemails these people generously gave us. 732-893-7155. I'll give it again, even though you could just hit that little 15-second back button. I won't make you do that. 732-893-7155. Whatever it is, questions, comments, you know, whether you're looking to deepen your handicapping, you want to ask us about specific horses, the incredibly turned over 2020 season, whatever it is, hit us up. We are here for you. And you already gave your final thought, so I'm going to wrap it if that's okay with you.
You got it.
That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I'd like to thank Jonathan Kinchin. I'd like to thank our friends you heard from up top at Keeneland Select. I love this Nourish the Backstretch promotion. Like I said, we don't want people to pay for picks ever, but what you can do is help us out by supporting the people who support us and make us able to do this for free. And that includes betting on Keeneland Select this month, especially where they are fully funding this Backstretch initiative, giving out all these meals and groceries to people who really need it. Support them and you're supporting us. So please go ahead and do that. I would also like to thank our partners at Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. We talked about them before, and also 10 Strike Racing. We talked about Marshall Graham before, but most of all, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, especially all of you who've been sending the nice notes and just continuing to support us during this time. We've heard a lot of stories about podcast numbers dropping off and not on this network. You guys have been here strong, and we really do appreciate it. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatel. May you win all your photos! Doesn't have time to handicap.